This is James Davis, and I'm coming to you from Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin, on the podcast 870 The Flyway.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
We're talking tech hunting on 870, The Flyway.
We're in the blind now, loading our guns and scanning the sky for the first flock of ducks to appear.
If I was a 27-year-old, I didn't even own a pair of hit boots.
All waiter.
There's a flock now. Looks like about 25 balance.
What kind of gun did you use?
Freaking 12-gauge, what do you think?
You're listening to 870 The Flyway, your duck and goose hunting podcast.
Memberships in the Canvasback Duck Club.
Canvasback? When I was a fighter, that's what they called me. I was on the canvas so much, I used to stand like that. Not for long.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Ordinarily, we're going to open up on ducks that are all of a half mile away.
Do you have any idea when the last time somebody won the world with a wooden duck hole?
We're hovering over the decoys. Okay, let him have it.
Did you shoot any?
Yes, like 50 of them.
Three ducks hit the water with a resounding splash.
On 870, The Flyway.
Welcome to 870 The Flyway. Gordy Gordon, your host. I'm publisher and editor of Duck and Goose Hunting Traditions magazine. And we have a brand new issue coming out very soon. Hope you'll subscribe. Go to DuckMags, DuckMagz, like zebra.com, and sign up. Our guest today is James Davis, as you heard on the intro. James is quite a fella. He writes for us. He's a tremendous outdoor writer. Dedicated waterfowl hunter who's out there after the ducks and geese, way after everybody else has gone home and huddled the fire. And that's what he's going to talk about today, is cold weather gear, what to wear when, where to get it. James is a hockey and rugby player. He has a tremendously good Chesapeake Bay retriever that he trains and works with himself. He's also a tremendous writer and speaker, works with young people in the high school level. He's a busy guy, and we're glad to have him. James Davis, thanks for being with us, James.
Gordy, thanks for having me. I'm really excited, and boy, this 870 The Flyway podcast is starting to take off, and I appreciate the opportunity. You know, waterfowling's a passion of mine, and I think, as all of us know, it's turned into a year-round thing. You know, a lot of guys go duck or goose hunting in the fall, but we all know that in the wintertime, it's kind of banquet season. In the spring, you've got retrievers to start training and decoys to carve and boats to paint, and it kind of takes you around for the year. But waterfowling's a passion of mine. I was influenced at a young age by my best friend's father, and I really just jumped into the sport. I started reading all the books and all the historical stories and the different sections of the country you can hunt. And I fell in love with it and try to get out 2 to 3 times a week during our season here in Wisconsin.
What did you read? What were some of the things that you read up that stick with you to this day?
You know, it's funny. I really started reading. I fell in love with Nash Buckingham. I loved the historical stories. I loved his written description of where he was hunting. Mm-hmm. And the Shooting as Gentlemen, Game Bag, those are some of my treasured classic books that I still look back on and read regularly.
Uh-huh. James, what if I might ask, what is it that you do for a vocation?
I'm a building and student supervisor at a local high school. I was a longtime football and rugby coach, and now I've kind of slid to the administrative side of things and work with young adults in the building throughout the day.
You talk about waterfowling as I got into it as a young age, thanks to a mentor. Do you remember your first duck?
I do.
Or goose?
I remember both. My grandfather gave me a 870 Wingmaster 16 gauge that he purchased right when he got back from World War II.
Oh,
it's
nice.
Still in my possession, and I still use it from time to time. But I shot my first duck was a green wing teal, and my first goose it was a Canadian goose, and both were shot at a private piece of property in Fox Lake, Wisconsin. And I can still picture the hill I was on that I shot the goose. It was past shooting, and the teal, we kind of jump shot the pond early in the morning. The funny thing is, I've gone back to kind of visit that area, and now there's a subdivision where that hunt took place, and it kind of makes you sad. You know, I've got all these memories of my first hunts, and now you're looking at ranch homes on that hill.
I think we've all been there. You know, drive up to a place where you hunted, and now there's a quickie mart there or something.
Right, right.
That's progress, I guess. Tell us a little bit about where and how you hunt waterfowl today, mainly. And you don't have to give away any special secret hidey holes.
No, definitely. You know, I consider myself Wisconsin wise and kind of Midwest wise a niche hunter is what I call.
Mm-hmm.
And so many guys hunt big water and big marshes with the new large boats. Technology's been a blessing to waterfowlers, and you know, these large War Eagle boats, Go Devil engines, they can kind of take you all over the place and get you places quickly.
Right.
I really kind of shy away from it. And what I do is in Wisconsin, we're fortunate to have quite a bit of public land and public access. And we have a lot of marshes that are no motor marshes. And you're not allowed to have any motors in there, electric or gasoline motors. And I use a Karstens duck skiff. I like the Mallard model because I've got a large Chesapeake Bay Retriever, and I can put him in the front. And I actually push pull when I go out to my spot. So it's kind of an older way to get through shallow waters. But I'll bring a paddle with me if the water is deeper and move you a little faster. But I really enjoy push pulling. And that's kind of I really target no motor marshes throughout Wisconsin. And that's kind of in small rivers and smaller bodies of water. And that's kind of my niche that I've been able to scout and have success throughout the state hunting that style.
Mm-hmm. And with that said, do you have a target species or several that you really like to go for, or are you a generalist?
I'm definitely a generalist. And in Wisconsin, really, I can touch upon it later. Wisconsin really, like a lot of states, you have your early season with your teal and your wood ducks and homegrown mallards.
Uh-huh.
And then we get about a 2-week window in the middle of October when the pintails and the widgeon and the gadwalls come through the state.
Yeah.
And then the last 25% of the season, you're looking at pretty much greenheads is what you're looking at. Maybe some odd pintails mixed in. And then, we can also hunt some divers. You know, we'll have some diver shoots. And that's kind of what I was going to touch upon when you ask about the season is this year was funny. The divers blew through with the heavy winds we had.
Really?
We really – if I can tell you about it now, the season was a great season. It was one of the better seasons I've had. And we had almost had a low pressure system with a north or northwest wind almost weekly and heavy winds, but not too heavy. And it was great. Almost every week we had a new push of birds coming down from Canada and the Dakotas. And it was a really nice season. And right around end of November, mid-November to late November is when the divers usually come through, and we had a big system come through with heavy winds. I'm talking 50 to 60 mile per hour northwest winds and north winds. And I think the divers blew through the state. I never in all my historic spots and my scouting 2 to 3 days a week, I never found any inland waters full of divers, which I normally do.
Uh-huh.
And I honestly think they just blew over the state of Wisconsin and hightailed it further south.
Sure. Well, they're no dummies. That we all want them to come down to our area and stall out and stick around regardless. But they're no fools. They're on a mission. They need to get to warm weather and warmer water.
They caught that wind and headed south. And then late season again was pretty traditional for Wisconsin. It got cold. We had some ice and single digits and below zero. And if you find open water, you're going to find ducks. And we get a large population of mallards in Canadian geese that I feel Wisconsin and Northern Illinois is almost the end of their migration. If they can still have open water and some cropland and grain to eat on, this is it. This is as far south as they come. Sometimes
you've hunted how long, James?
This was actually my 31st season.
Homemade is great when it comes to biscuits, but not the boat blinds that's going to hide you from ducks and geese. Two things about building your own boat blind: either it'll fit or you're going to throw one. Don't throw a fit. Call Pop-Up Blinds in Columbus, Nebraska and talk to Jeff Molnix. When you're ready to buy the last boat blind you'll ever need, give a call to Jeff and discuss it. 402-276-1424, and Pop-Up is our sponsor for this half hour of 870 The Flyway. Thank you, Jeff.
These birds get hunted hard. I mean, the waterfowlers are out there are hunting them hard all the way from Canada, you know, early August, you know, into September. They're hitting them hard through the Dakotas. And I think they've kind of figured out that they can find that little area right in there where if they go too far south, the seasons are still open. You know, if they're getting down into Missouri and Southern Illinois and Arkansas, they're getting shot pretty good.
Right.
If they can weather it and stay kind of in Northern Illinois, Wisconsin, through the Dakotas, Nebraska, that area, I think they found out they can kind of weather the storm a little bit, and they're great at surviving, and I think they've found that they're surviving down here.
Absolutely, and surviving is kind of where we're headed in this next portion of the segment. You know, in your area, you've told me that it's not uncommon for you to have single digits and wind chills below zero for a lot of the season. Where, you know, in my case, but roughly from Iowa, Missouri on south, you know, if it gets to 15, you know, that's extreme conditions. You have real extreme conditions up there.
Yes.
Tell me how you hunt those, that moving water and the spring fed deep lakes and those late mallards and divers.
You know,
out for them, I should say. I should include that. It's as far as your personal gear, your attire.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you touched upon it. I mean, a lot of times it's single digits. We've got below zero wind chills, and it can be very dangerous. I mean, you tip over in a skiff or a canoe or any type of, you're around water, you can have a real dangerous situation, life-threatening situation pretty quickly. So it's very important to have the right clothing on. And I think we've all noticed it. We've had those hunts growing up where you're just shivering and you're ice cold and you're out there because you love it. But at the end of the day, you're like, boy, that was kind of miserable. Where the newer technology with clothing has really taken off. And I look at some of the big companies. I look at the Sitka and the First Light and the Kuyu and the Drake. And I know it's a sweatshirt you're wearing. Waterfowl clothing and gear in the last 10 years has really, really improved.
Oh, yeah.
And if you look at it, a lot of these companies have modeled themselves after mountain climbing companies. They've modeled themselves after the Patagonias of the world, the North Face and the Marmots. And those conditions on when you're climbing Mount Everest, you know, it's 30, 40 below. It's serious, dangerous temperatures. And they've perfected their clothing with the different materials and the athletic cuts to kind of allow you to move around and the hand warmer pockets. And I just think it's a wonderful time for clothing and gear as far as being a waterfowler. And I can go through here a little bit and kind of tell you what I like to wear and kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Go ahead and give us your personal gear checklist. And if you want to name names and brands and stuff like that, that's great with me. I don't mind a bit.
Okay. No, that sounds great. Like I was saying, a lot of it is for safety. I mean, to be dressed warm. And I think we all kind of know about dressing in layers. We learned that as young bucks getting out hunting, you know, dress in layers. And I think the biggest thing right now or the biggest change I've seen that I learned from being a younger hunter till now, you know, 30 years later, is moisture management. I think we all learned that moisture is a killer. I mean, you get damp and you're sweating, you're dragging your skiff out, or you're putting your decoys out and you're getting sweated up. And then all of a sudden you have that cotton sweatshirt on or cotton, those old waffle cotton long underwear. And you sat there and you were still wet at the end of the hunt. You're damp and cold and you never quite warmed up. Right. Where today's materials really work to move moisture away from your skin. Next thing you know, you're sweated up and 10 minutes later, you're dry. and, mm-hmm. and you can feel that moisture moving through. So I guess to start off, you know, everyone complains about cold feet, and what we found up here to really keep our feet warm is we use alpaca wool or bison wool socks. The wool from those, the alpaca or bison, really, it's a thick, very dense wool, and we use those, and that seems to be what's doing the trick on keeping our feet warm.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing to add with that is we also look for a merino wool long underwear, which is called a base layer. Anything kind of a synthetic base layer is wonderful compared to cotton. It's going to move moisture away from your skin. You wear synthetic bottoms and a synthetic top. There's a company called Smart Wool. A lot of people are familiar with their socks. They make fabulous long underwear. You can buy a merino wool long underwear bottoms and tops. And the nice thing about wool, it insulates when it's wet. It moves moisture, but if you get a little damp in there or clammy, that wool continues to insulate while you're wet.
Homemade is great when it comes to biscuits, but not the boat blinds that's going to hide you from ducks and geese. Two things about building your own boat blind: either it'll fit or you're going to throw one. Don't throw a fit. Call Pop-Up Blinds in Columbus, Nebraska, and talk to Jeff Molnix. When you're ready to buy the last boat blind you'll ever need, give a call to Jeff and discuss it. 402-276-1424, and Pop-Up is our sponsor for this half hour of 870 The Flyway. Thank you, Jeff.
The next thing, you know, everyone, most of the hunting I do, I'm not a field hunter. I mean, I don't shy away from it, but I really enjoy being out in a skiff and working around the water. I wear wader pants, and boy, these have really changed from back in the day where you wear a pair of blue jeans under a pair of waders and
right.
off you go. these new wader pants, they're a high loft fleece backer is what I look for, and it's smooth outside. And the big thing, I look for stirrups underneath. And those are nice because when you put your waders on, you don't have that ball of material from your pants all jammed up by your knee.
Right.
That we've all felt before. But these stirrups, if you find a pair of wader pants that are fleece lined and have a kind of a slick outer material, you can slide into your waders and you're comfortable. And boy, they really keep you warm. And if you go to, you know, we chatted, this is a great time of year to purchase gear. It's on sale and it's the end of the season. And I was just looking the other day, Sitka's got a great wader pant called the Gradient pant that I personally wear. And other companies, Drake has some nice wader pants with stirrups and Max Prairie Wings. The different times that basically what you're looking for is a tapered leg with a high loft fleece backer and a smooth outside and stirrups. And that really does the trick on those cold days under your waders.
James, we're going to take a break right there, and we're going to come back and talk about the rest of your gear right after this.
You're listening to 870 The Flyway, your duck and goose hunting podcast.
And we're back with James Davis, Wisconsin waterfowler. Extreme conditions is the watchword for most of his season. So he's filling us in on what his gear locker has in it as far as clothing and outerwear. So James, you were up to the point of talking about waders, I think.
Yes, I was. And, you know, that's probably one of the most important part of your waterfowling gear is a pair of waders. And they've got some great ones now. They've got the old 5mm neoprene rubber ones. The biggest thing I look for in this cold weather hunting is you're really going to look for in the boot 1600 grams of Thinsulate. You're going to want some warm boots in there. And I like to buy them one size larger. That's a good tip there. Buy them one size larger, and that way you're able to wear two pairs of socks. And I can promise you, with one size larger 1600 gram waders with two pairs of alpaca or bison wool socks, your feet will be warm all the way down to below zero temperatures.
All right.
Yeah, it does a nice job.
Okay. James, what about the breathable waders? Does anybody up there wear those much?
They do earlier in the season, and they do later the season because it works with more, it moves moisture.
Okay.
I've had some luck with them. I personally find the 5mm, the old style big thick neoprene ones, to be warmer.
All right, James, we got up to the point of like the shirts and jackets and things like that. What's your pleasure there?
You know, I'll kind of tell you what I go through with my top layer and to stay warm. I wear that base layer, that merino wool base layer, and then I wear a wool shirt, 100% virgin wool shirt, and I prefer the Pendleton Fireside shirt. It's not super thick, and it's thin enough to get under coats, and you're still able to move around and be dexterous.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I really like to wear a pullover, a low-pile fleece pullover, either a Patagonia or a Primaloft pullover from mm-hmm. Patagonia is another company that I like. Mm-hmm. Both of those move moisture and insulate, and they're an athletic cut, so you're not feeling, you're not looking like the guy from the Christmas Story that he's all, you know, Ralphie, where he's gonna
right.
Play, where he's wearing too many clothes.
Right, or the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. That's what
right,
I
mean. Right. The next thing I really think is crucial is an insulated down vest. I really like to wear a down vest or anything. It just adds a little more insulation to your core. And then almost just as important as your waders is your waterfowling parka, or nowadays everyone's calling them a hard shell. Uh-huh. That'd be your outer layer. And anything that's Gore-Tex, boy, that Gore-Tex material really is a nice material. It's windproof. It's a waterproof. It allows a barrier from you and the outside elements. And to make sure you've got a hood on that. But I wear the Sitka Gore-Tex Delta wading jacket. I know Columbia's got wonderful, their quad parka has been around for years. That's a wonderful outside hard shell jacket. Tons of other companies that you're looking for a windproof, waterproof shell that's going to kind of keep all that heat in and keep the elements off your body.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a big difference.
What about a lid? You wear a cap up there, I'm sure.
Yes, you know, I'm kind of old school and pay homage to our roots and our backgrounds, and I'm a big Jones cap guy. I love wear a Jones style cap with the ear flaps. I've got a Gore-Tex one that was made years ago from Cabela's,
uh-huh.
and I'll tell you that cap in my mind was genius because the way it's turned up at the back, the rain or moisture doesn't go down the back of your neck, and you
right.
dip. You lean forward and you see it run out the front of the bill of that cap. So I wear a Jones style cap mm-hmm. with ear flaps, and that's served me well for about the last 25 years. And now it's kind of become a lucky charm. You feel
right.
kind of lost without it. And that's the one piece of gear that goes with me on every hunt.
Yep. Well, see, we're singing out of the same hymnal on that one, James, because I've always worn the Jones style cap as well. And it is super versatile. All right, and then on your hands, I'm sure you probably go wool again.
Yeah, I like to use a waterproof insulated downhill ski glove. They're insulated, they're waterproof for the paddle in or when I'm push pulling.
Uh-huh.
When I'm working with decoys, you know, it's ice cold out here, and water is a dangerous threat when it's in the single digits. I use heavy PVC insulated. They're lobster gloves. The guys use them on the lobster ships out on the East Coast. And then when I'm hunting, you know, once I've done the water work and gotten out there and you're kind of in the blind or you're all set up in your skiff, I use insulated form-fitting deerskin gloves. They're warm and they're dexterous. They allow you to shoot real well. They're not good with water, but if you're just sitting in the blind, you need to pull that trigger and work your gun. The insulated deerskin leather gloves are really, really nice for shooting.
I see. Well, that's an interesting twist. I've never actually done that myself. I can see that working. Did you bag the deer that provided the gloves, or?
No, I did not. I'm,
okay.
I'm not. I'm usually a little tip for all the listeners out there. Some of the best duck hunting in the state of Wisconsin is during our gun deer season.
Okay, which is when?
The weekend before Thanksgiving is when deer season opens, and that's when the largest migration of the canvasbacks are coming down to Pool 9 on the Mississippi River.
Uh-huh.
And that's usually when you get the big flight of mallards coming through. And more importantly, the hunting pressure is way, way down on all the properties because everyone's out there trying to bag a big buck.
Is there a lot of pressure on your public lands up there in Wisconsin generally?
There is. And that's one of the reasons I went from the big motor Go Devil and motorboats to using skiffs and no motor marshes. It was kind of my niche to get away from the crowds because you got to be in pretty good shape to get, you know, to paddle out and push pull out to these places. So it affords me the ability to get away from the large crowds.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, James, it's been an education. I sure appreciate it. I know all of our listeners are going to have come away having learned something, and we picked up some keywords and some brand names we can look for now that things are on sale here at the end of the waterfowl season and with warm weather coming. Put them away and have them ready to go whenever it gets single digits next year.
Yep, I agree. No, a perfect time. Just looking the other day, a lot of the big stores are on sale, and you know, easy access nowadays with everything online. You got, you know, Rogers Sporting Goods, Max Prairie Wings, direct from the supplier. You can order right from Drake. You can order right from Patagonia, Sitka, whatever you're looking for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. James, it's been a pleasure to have you on the air, and we're going to look for a chance to have you on again on a future podcast, and definitely keep writing for the magazine. This has been James Davis from Wisconsin talking about cold weather wear for waterfowlers, you know, the opportunities there to sock some stuff away that is going to work super for you, and not the old, you know, the old sweatshirt over a t-shirt under a canvas jacket, which you know, we used to those god awful green three eyelet packs that were insulated and name only. So anyway, today's waterfowler has a lot of opportunities to gear up. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate your time. Yeah, thank you for the opportunity.
You betcha.
You're listening to 870 The Flyway, your duck and goose hunting podcast.
Time now for Flyway News on 870 The Flyway. I'm Gordy Gordon. No joy in the South Carolina search for that missing duck hunter. No truth to the rumors either. This and other stories right now on the news. South Carolina investigators say that rumors on the internet are not true about missing duck hunter Tyler Doyle, who's been missing since January 26 when he and a buddy encountered trouble in their open boat on rough seas near North Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Dateline Pocomoke City, Maryland. The Delmarva Heritage Festival this year is carving across generations, and they'll have blue ribbon carvers doing demonstrations, duck calling contests, oyster sandwiches, tailgating, and more. That's at the Delmarva Discovery Museum in Pocomoke City, March 25, 10 to 4, and March 26, 12 to 4. Dateline Havre de Grace, Maryland. Mark your calendars. The 41st Annual Decoy and Wildlife Art Festival is Friday, May 5 through Sunday, May 7th. More information at www.decoymuseum.com. Dateline Sandpoint, Idaho. And finally, in news today, the Sandpoint City Council learned a few things about goose hunting and the weather. About 100 volunteer hunters were lined up over a 7-day period to take out a portion of 250 geese that had been bothering folks at a local swim beach. Weather was to blame. During the hunt, the temperature plummeted to -5 degrees, sending the geese skedaddling. That's the news for now. 870, The Flyway. All right, now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're going to have a blast in the past. We're going to stack some wax here for a record album that you're going to flip over. It's number one on the hit parade this week. This is a special request, a dedication going out from a lonely duck hunter in southern Missouri to a mallard in northern Canada. This is Come Back Next Fall and I'll Blow Your Ass Off. No, wait a minute. This is a record album called Mallard Ducks and Other Ducks of the Puddler Class, How to Call Them and How to Shoot Them. B.S. Olt made this record in 1950. Hope you enjoy it.
We're in the blind now, loading our guns and scanning the sky for the first flock of ducks to appear. Ordinarily, we're going to open up on ducks that are all of a half mile away, giving the long call or greeting call. There's a flock now. Looks like about 25 mallards. So we grab the duck call and start blowing loud and high in their direction so it will surely carry to them. Notice how this call is made to simulate two or three mallard hens on the water joining their calls and pleading with those ducks to come down to them. Listen. Now, it's entirely possible that those birds have already been called in several times and have had several rounds of shot thrown in their faces. If that's the case, they'll be nervous, turn away when you open up, and few callers will even waste their time on them. But if they're interested, and they are breaking in flight and turning toward us, which gives us the cue to start the come on in or come on back call. flock is steadily coming toward us, losing altitude, eyeing our decoys, and trying to make up their minds. That's the time to give them the confidential chatter of the feeding chuckle, cramming in an optimistic quack, 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 quack of contentment as they come nearer and nearer like this. Chattering is suspended as they pass over us. We don't want to attract their attention to us in the blind. Now, they're going away, so we start the come on back call again. They're swinging short, coming back. The feeding chuckle. Passing by. The come on back call. That did it. Here they come. They're satisfied. They've heard no unnatural silence and calling. What a sight this is as we peep over the edge of our blind. Coming, coming, riding in on rigid wings, we can begin to pick out the green heads of the drakes now. A little more of the feeding chuckle. They're rocking gently to lose altitude quickly. They stick out their orange-colored legs. They're hovering over the decoys. Okay, let them have it. Three ducks hit the water with a resounding splash. Well, that's it, friends, the ultimate in duck hunting. Anything else is anticlimax. To us, the thrills of duck hunting are measured by the part we feel we've played in making it possible for you. Good luck and good hunting.
Well, folks, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Thanks for being with us. We appreciate you listening to 870 The Flyway. Special thanks to James Davis and Philip Olt IV for today's show. Be here next week when our guest is Chad Adams, How to Walk in the Marsh, a brand new book that's about waterfowl hunting and so much more. It's fantastic. Sweeping the country. You've got to get a copy of this book, and we'll tell you why. We're going to send you home this week with a little goose music. This is Snows Down Low's greatest hits, 40 Million Snow Geese in a Wheat Field outside Stuttgart, Arkansas, February 13th, 2021. Take a kid hunting if you can. Get out and enjoy the great outdoors this spring. It's later than you think, guys. Thanks for listening.